Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. Gareth Southgate, massive international teams and vuvuzelas are the orders of the day. It's Saturday 23rd of March. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Vidushan Antaraja.
It's Saturday, everybody. Sabado, Andy Brassel, come on. Give me some of that. Later, England play Brazil in what will be a match to end all international friendlies.
If you're listening to this in the morning, get on it. What time's kick off? 7:30, isn't it?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, get on it.
Get on it! If you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Why, Andy, why did he do it? That's the musketeer for you. Of course, you can email us, show@footballramble.com. But if you really want to be genuinely considered, of course, then become a patron at patreon.com/footballramble, because the Discord is a marvellous place. Right then, Andy, you've got the first question.
We've got one from Phil on X. It says, the narrative that has been created around Southgate is one of squandered opportunities and an inability to match tactics against the elite in Europe.
Show some fucking respect.
If England had won the penalty shootout, it's not Phil's opinion, against Italy, would there be a completely different narrative? Thank you.
I'll take this one.
Will you?
Yeah, I think it has been a succession of squandered opportunities.
Right.
I think the reason that England have persisted with him, though, is because the country is wrapped in this, you know, in this woke-ageddon, if you will. And I would say the sooner we see the back of him, the better.
Right.
You just have to.
I know you want him at Manchester United.
We just have to endure one more summer of pain, and then we can undo. Like when you know another government comes in, we can undo and unstrip all the terrible work he's done.
Right.
And that's the answer. So I've got another question here from Jamie.
I know you want him at Manchester United as soon as possible.
I think, so because of the nature of this, I do actually genuinely want to kick this off.
Okay.
Because I think even just the use of the word narrative, I totally get where Phil's coming from here, but the narrative comes from a place where Gareth Southgate got people in back into A, wanting to support the England team, and B, wanting to play for the England team.
Yeah. Two important points.
And because of his longevity, there is there is a conversation being had at the moment about whether this is it for him, whether this should be it for him, and this, that, and the other. To the extent that, because it's sort of a period of time that we're broadly unused to, that the FA and Southgate himself have had to come out and say, look, let's reassess this at the end of the summer. And fundamentally, with what he's created, a lot of players have come through. I still think there is a conversation to be had about the tactics and whatever, and it will probably come to a head this summer. And I feel like that's when we can purely judge him. Because from my point of view, broadly, this has been a huge success.
It's been the best time being an England fan.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I would. Being like, I was footballingly sentient to a point in 96. But no, I would agree with that.
It's been better than Euro 96. I think you're...
No, sure. But what I'm saying is that would be a period that people...
Yeah, totally, people romanticise
and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think that changes the question about tactics. But yeah, I totally agree with that.
Well, to answer the question very simply and directly, I think the answer is actually yes. And I think that when Phil says the narrative, there is a narrative. I'd say there's two basic narratives here. The one that Vish talked about there with those 2 points, and then the narrative that Phil has described here.
Yeah, I think that's probably maybe the slightly better way of putting it. The fact that it's not the narrative, it's a narrative.
It's a narrative, yeah. But I think had England won that penalty shootout against Italy, then I don't think... Obviously, the narrative of squandered opportunities wouldn't be there because they'd have taken that one.
No.
And that's the thing, the finest of margins in football, of course. I think, though, that the nature of the game in that Euros final with England trying to just sit on a one-goal lead for so long, and then when it went 1-1, England never looked like getting a second. I mean, you could argue Italy didn't either. I think it's not just the fact that, it was a penalty and it didn't go our way, or England's way, should I say. I think it was the way the match played out. So I think that's what it is, because if England had won a tournament under Southgate, then any of the doubters would just be immediately pointed to that. It doesn't mean to say that you can then turn up at the World Cup and be absolute rubbish. But I mean, when Italy went out, or didn't qualify rather, for the World Cup in Qatar,
yes,
you had a lot of people saying, well, to be honest with you, I'd rather have won the Euros and then not qualified. Like, if you see what I mean, I would swap the hand that Italy have been dealt there rather than...
Although it's quite an unlikely hand to be repeated.
It's a pointless thing to say, yes. But that's how much people want... England fans want to see a trophy win, because it's been obviously been completely sparse since 66, and that's the one victory. So yeah, but I think that, Andy, you often make this point, and perhaps you will now, although I'll leave that to you, is that the margins are so fine at international football to kind of it's not a league format, and the tournaments are so kind of few and far between every couple of years. So I think this has been a period of success that Vish talks about, but of course, success in its truest and fullest form is with a trophy win. And that's the only thing.
I guess it's the difference between success and perfection, isn't it? It's relative success. Absolutely. When you look at England's history.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you wouldn't say...
In terms of tournament results, it is unequivocally a success.
That's
just not debatable, is it?
Well, I mean, they're lacking the trophy. I mean, again, but you look at the three.
But like, only two teams can win the.
Yeah, well, of course.
All you can do in any cup competition is put yourself in a position where you can win it, and that has been done in a couple of tournaments where habitually England have not done that in international.
Well, and also people forget about Russia 2018. I know it's a number of years ago now.
That's exactly one of the ones that I had in mind. Actually.
Exactly, because it was the only tournament genuinely that I've ever known, and I came in. My football sentence began in 1990, but then in terms of media and all that kind of chat, it would be probably 96, because didn't make it in 94, and who remembers Euro 92? It was the only tournament, genuinely, where the expectation was incredibly low. People used to say in the tournaments building up to that, well, I think the expectation's really low, so I think that's a good thing for England, so I think they'll do well. You think, you realise how you've just undermined your own statement there. But it genuinely was, and it was kind of like a free hit, and it was probably the most enjoyable tournament, actually, when we had a bit of glorious failure at the end, although it was slightly disappointing. But France would have definitely won, whoever was the winner of that game against Croatia in England, which, of course, it was Croatia. So I think that Phil is right to point out that the fact that it was at home as well, although home advantage, specifically international football, is actually tends not to be the advantage you actually might think it is, just statistically. Can be, but in terms of finals and the actual crucial moments, not. And France themselves know about that, of course.
Yeah, I think, yeah, there are a couple of sides to this, really. I think, firstly, the thing about the point that Phil makes about had England won the penalty shootout, I think that's really important in that a lot of, I've definitely discussed this before, but a lot of football discussion and framing of what happened in football is essentially dishonest because we frame it by results rather than what actually happened.
Yeah, even a moment, which is why I wanted to extrapolate that out to
the
full game.
Yeah, I think that's right. The other thing is, the point that you kind of touched on about England's tactics in the final, which I think is a fair point in terms of the fact that England were trying to sit on the lead, or England... Another way of looking at that is England went out the traps really quickly and just ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Because that is not a Southgate thing, actually.
No.
That is an England thing going back several coaches and arguably generations.
Which because is odd of, to think because you have such a different cycle of players, but it's still there.
Yeah, but it takes a while for the characteristics of a national team to change because of the sort of players that are being produced.
Yeah.
That is something that happens over generations. So that very Premier League-y way that England have habitually played in major tournaments come out of like really quickly, and then after an hour they've got nothing left.
Because in the spirit of the Premier League and some big games in Europe, obviously the recent ones as well, England might have been better off going behind early on. And then sort of trying to roar their way back into it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that is
pure chaos theory.
That is
know,
an argument. But like people will, because they're games at the thick end of a tournament, people look at Italy, they look at the Croatia semi-final in 2018 and go, it's a Southgate problem. That is demonstrably untrue if you look at the history of English football or England in tournaments over the last 20 years or so. I think the other thing is, if we're going
to
get really into the weeds of the question, an inability to match tactics against the elite in Europe. And a lot of people will say that. Where is the elite in Europe?
Well,
if you're talking about Gareth Southgate, the idea that, oh, we've only got Gareth Southgate. All right, where are the other amazing international coaches? There aren't amazing international coaches because they're coaching in the club.
And
game.
Also, as
because
well,
because international football has changed.
But in that game as well, Roberto Mancini, far more celebrated and experienced and successful coach than Southgate, lest we forget. They didn't beat England.
Yeah.
They were sort of fairly, it was a scrappy goal they scored, and fair enough, they were pressing. But they didn't, bearing in mind an England defence, which, you know, has been criticised a lot in the past, mainly because of Maguire and so on, did hold Italy at arm's length for a large part of that game. And I know it's all kind of silly, vacuous stuff now. But I mean.
And I guess that's another question as well. Would you refer to Mancini as an elite coach or a very good coach?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good point. You've just cut to the core of it there. Italy didn't beat England.
Yeah, and Italy
in
the semi-final against Spain, people would have said that Spain were actually the better side, you know. But again, Italy showed their canniness. And again, it's called canniness because they won the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
They lose that penalty shootout. Now, I understand you can be good at penalties. There is an element of good fortune. The keeper guesses the right way and so on, or you know, you just mishit it. But it is a demonstrable skill, so I don't want to start, oh, it's a lottery. It's not a lottery. But, you know, a bad team can beat a good team on penalties. So, but it's called canniness from Italy because they ended up beating Spain, whereas, of course, on another day.
They're crafty on the continent as well, aren't they?
Very crafty.
They're crafty.
Pulling Saka back and so on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, of course, now...
I mean, that was not crafty, was it?
Well,
of course, now if he grabbed the collar of the shirt, you know, if he's trying to rip that flag off, then we would be for it, wouldn't we? If you know what I mean.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This one's from Tim, one of our Patreon subscribers, who emailed us. US listener here, who recently got into soccer, his words, not mine, at club level, and don't know much about the international scene, but I'm so pumped for the World Cup in 2026. Who is the defining international team in football history? Great question.
Does he mean a one-off team or a team full stop?
It's a good question.
Like an iteration of a team.
I think you should interpret it how you see fit.
Okay, because my impulse is Brazil.
And specifically 1970 Brazil.
But then, like, all of them.
But the reason why it's specifically 1970 Brazil, as we know, the debate in Brazil has been that teams post then have been essentially trying to recapture that.
Yeah.
1982, they had a bit of that, but they didn't win. Dunga in 94, when he's shouting at the journalists, when he lifts the trophy, and he's swearing away, apparently, is like, oh, I told you I could do it because he's an unfancied player and not typically Brazilian. And you know, 2002... wasn't celebrated like a sort of classic Brazil side, but there was an element of it, you could say.
Well, 98 was a classic Brazil side.
You could argue that, but obviously they didn't win.
No, but so this is why, where my answer is rooted in. Obviously they, you know, they have won World Cups and stuff like that.
Mm.
But they are the quintessential international team because off the back of those victories...
Yep.
They basically formed a cult, didn't they?
Yeah, kind
like
of.
A global cult for a country is a remarkable thing to do. It's one thing Real Madrid and Barcelona doing it.
But
for a team to have people enamoured with their style of play to the point where kids now would want to buy like an early Brazil shirt.
Sure.
Like it's been become part of like bloke core, if you can call it
despite
that.
Despite not having won the World Cup for 20 years. But the reason why I think Brazil, and specifically 1970... is because it's the first World Cup in colour, which is it was just a huge thing.
It's considered almost the apex of football still, isn't it?
Totally, yeah. And all this sort of thing, Pelé's involved, one of the most celebrated players of all time, maybe the most, you could argue. They win it, they play incredible football, and that is still seen as something that they hark back to in Brazil. Now, every country's guilty, hark back to 66 in this country, for crying out loud. So that's why I think that you can talk about the other teams that have come after. They're still trying to get an essence of 1970.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that as you say, Marcus, quite rightly, 1970 and Brazil 70 are a massive turning point in Brazilian football and football in general. Mm. But sometimes not for the reasons that you quite think, because we think of the fourth goal in the final and think of that's the ultimate expression of this beautiful team game. But actually, Brazil are ahead of the curve because they get the shit kicked out of them at the 1966 World Cup.
Yeah.
And they think, right, that's not going to happen to us again.
Yeah.
And they become really the first international team to lean into strength and conditioning and all that sort of stuff in the build-up to 1970, which is extraordinary. And so we think of it as the technical apex, but actually, at that time...
Yeah.
It's the physical apex.
It's a really good point to make.
Of football as well, and that really starts. But I don't know. I think what Vish was saying about like how it creates a cult. I think that's really important because you could argue that up until that point, and maybe past that point, England is the home of football. England is the birthplace of football. Mm-hmm. But now, a lot of people, and people all over the world, and even some people in England, would say that Brazil is the spiritual home of football. When you've got the 2014 World Cup, like people are like, oh, can there be anything better than a World Cup in Brazil? And I tell you what, when I was at the last World Cup in Doha, I went to the first Brazil game.
Yeah, talking of homes of football.
Yeah, exactly. I went to the first Brazil game they played against Serbia where, you know, Richarlison scores that incredible goal. And there was definitely a feeling. I mean, there was a weird feeling in a lot of the stadiums. And you often get that at World Cups. And I'm really interested and... maybe Tim, you can keep an eye on this for us. What the atmosphere will be like at the US World Cup in 2026. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you found this, particularly in the last two World Cups, there's a little bit of international friendly feel actually to the atmosphere in the stadium.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because you don't have, especially to Russia and Qatar, which are difficult for people to get to, expensive for people to get to, it's you don't really get that sort of massive travelling fans or partisanship with the exception of a few nations. Whereas when you go into that stadium in Doha for Brazil versus Serbia, there is a feeling of, fuck me, we're all here watching Brazil at a World Cup. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
And like the feeling that you get off that, off the crowd, is something quite different. But again, going back to, if we're talking about the defining international teams.
Yeah, there's a couple more to mention.
In terms of Europe, I mean, we talked before about how, like, you know, it's sort of getting the result of a game and justifying everything from there is not really like the truth. I think the 1974 Netherlands side is absolutely pivotal. There's a difference between successful and influential.
No, it's too hipster. It's too hipster.
It's not a hipster. It's Johan Cruyff.
No. Nowadays, it's seen. It would be a bit of a hipster's choice. I get what you're saying, but we have to mention Spain. They won three tournaments in a row. That would be way more. Like, look at the influence of the style of play that Guardiola had.
Modern defining team.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Now,
I think this is, sorry to interrupt there, but I think this is a great conversation you two are having here because it really touches on what you see as defining. Because I think from a football perspective, Marcus, you're absolutely right. From Tim's perspective, I think it is actually based on a kind of heritage that goes beyond a style of play.
Yeah.
Spain's a funny one because I think Spain aren't spoken about in that way because of Barcelona.
Possibly.
Because it's identified as Barcelona.
But it's also too recent, I think. I think in years to come, you know, people often appreciate stuff when it's further back.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us were alive for Netherlands 74 or this, you know, Brazil 70, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
It's revered. You said when Franz Beckenbauer died, he's one of those Mount Rushmore players, which is a brilliant way of putting it. And you're absolutely right. And I think sometimes the seductiveness of it all, if that's a word, is the fact that you weren't there to see it.
Yeah.
Or you know the people who are talking about it.
It's like digging in the crates, isn't it?
Kind of. And you get
taught about history and those historical figures are up there
immediately. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they never go any lower. Yeah.
Now, the difference is nowadays, I think there's so much footage and things look, you know, in the modern era, things... World Cups aren't treated perhaps as the way they used to be due to, you know, so much footage. You know, Champions League, people saying is a better standard of football when it gets to the crunch. Us knowing a lot more about other football from abroad, whereas World Cups back in the day were like, hang on, who is this team from abroad? We've not seen the style of play. It was more exotic, you could argue.
You've lost that, but do you know what? I think the World Cup gives the same feeling. Because we're sitting in there, and I think this is especially important with Tim's question as someone who recently got into soccer. I think it's really easy to sit in a room like this and thinking of us who talk about football for a living, you know, what defines football for us and what defines, you know, international football for us. But the whole point about international football, it's not just for people who are into football.
Well, and also people from other parts of the world.
It's a global event that grabs people. And in an era where you don't really get like water cooler television, for want of a better expression, because, you know, you have on demand, which is how most people watch television, and, you know, they watch what they like when they like. to have a global sporting event that grabs people, like, even more than the Olympics.
Of course it does, yeah.
It's remarkable, and that endures about the World Cup.
That's a good thing, and also in different cultures, different countries, they might have slightly different answers. I think Brazil is the answer to the question. There's maybe one or two others. You could have Argentina in there as well because of Maradona and now Messi. But Argentina, due to the nature of how they conduct themselves and how they celebrate, they're a much more divisive team than, say, Brazil.
Now, with both of those, you're talking about defining individuals, really.
There's that.
Who happen to play for the same nation.
Fine, but two of the most celebrated individuals, along with Pelé, perhaps no one else, maybe, have been the most celebrated footballers of all time. But I think the thing about Brazil is it's certainly perceived outside of South America, or maybe within South America as well, is the fact that, you know, that whole samba thing, and again, 90s, they look like they're enjoying themselves, and they look like they're everyone's second team, and are you happy to see them win because they look like a bunch of happy-go-lucky type of guys. The fact is that they're a bit rough and ready on the pitch as well, as we know, and like a bit of shithousery as much as the next team.
Winning is all that counts for them.
Well,
which is often overlooked.
Whereas in Argentina are very happy for everybody to know they're a bunch of shithouses, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so therefore they're a bit more, slightly more divisive, and they've had fewer cup wins, World Cup wins than Brazil. But I mean, if you really want to go back, you know, the 1950s Hungarian side would be in there. But I think that's what you're talking about. That's the history. That's the you sort of chronological order of these great teams and influencing styles. But I think in terms of the masses, I think we answered it. Brazil is the one. So Vish, you've got the final question.
I do, and it's from Jamie. If, and this is a monumentally big if, Scotland get far in the Euros, could the bagpipe become the new global sensation as vuvuzelas did?
Yeah, I don't think so, because I'm sure the bagpipes are much harder to play.
Oh, I was going to say they're more difficult to mass produce cheaply.
100%. This is the thing, isn't
it?
Yeah. You don't want a cheap bagpipe.
You always think like a capitalist, Andy.
That's exactly it. It's quite funny how at the Brazilian World Cup in 2014 that we're already talking about, they tried to kind of piggyback on the vuvuzela. They had this thing called a cachinha.
Yes.
A cachinha, can you believe it? Just because it's got an X on it, it's still coming from FIFA.
Yeah.
And it's this little kind of egg-shaped thing with a knobbly outside, like a wood chip wallpaper, which has got sort of perforated things on the side, and it's got a handle on it, and you kind of like shake it.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Glad you said shake it there with that little hand gesture.
I'm trying to think what would be the easiest thing.
Can I say with the vuvuzelas, by the way, that very early on in the life of the Football Ramble, just a few years after
I'm terrified that you're about to get one out.
Well, Andy, don't mind me and my vuvuzela. I do own a couple, actually. We went over to South Africa, to Joburg for the final. We didn't go to the final, but we did a bit of stuff around it and so on. And obviously a lot of people had been complaining about that constant noise that you could hear on the television when the games were playing. And some people saying, you don't get the atmosphere the same of people singing and chanting or whatever it may be. There were criticisms, rightly or wrongly, think, there were criticisms. And we got there, and as soon as you bought one, you were like, it was absolutely brilliant. We were like, this is it. This is absolutely it. It was super. They're more difficult to play than you might imagine, the vuvuzelas. You've really got to give it plenty. And so it gave me a complete new appreciation of how much lung capacity and power
it's technique, surely. It's like a trombone or a French horn, isn't it?
Appreciated the technique.
It's not about power, is it? I imagine you must be able to play the bagpipes a bit.
Much
right?
Like Brazil 1970, Andy, you've got to have the technique and the power.
Yeah.
Can you play the bagpipes?
Of course I can't.
You've got to blow and give and do it at the right time, isn't it?
Exactly, but you've got to get to half time.
So
I don't think the bagpipes will become that, but you never know. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too expensive.
I think there's too much going on. I think with the vuvuzela, give us one. Yeah. It was only a few quid. You know, as long as your technique and your lung capacity is all right, you'll be able to go for hours and hours, quite frankly. Well, you were going to say that there was another instrument you were going to try?
Trying to think
drums are quite popular, but I mean, they're quite sort of universal
but you kind of also, what would be an American instrument that you'd be able to bring in, just shoot a gun in the air, couldn't you?
Oh, come on.
Yeehaw!
Outrageous. I'm sorry,
about,
Tim, and everybody.
A banjo.
Yeah. I just think
need to be good. But what I'm saying is, like, the thing about Vuvuzela,
an electric guitar playing like stadium rock, I would think, or decks, and then, you know, two turntables and a microphone.
You kind of need to. It would be. I suppose one of the things about American soccer in particular is that they lean a lot on English tradition in some ways.
You're welcome.
So, you know, the is it the Rattlers?
The Rattlers, Gordon Bennett.
Like maybe those?
They were outlawed at English grounds for good reason.
They were outlawed?
Probably. If they weren't, they should have been. Nobody has a rattle these days.
I think they would. They have a fucking chainsaw in MLS, don't they?
Yeah, but not here.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, for the World Cup, what would be the equivalent of the World Cup thing going forward?
Those clappers you get at Fulham.
There you go.
If anyone's unfamiliar.
Well, of course, they've got a proud American heritage for them, don't they? So,
I wouldn't say heritage, but they've got an American owner, or certainly an American citizen, yeah.
And a centre back.
And
a number of players.
And a legendary
striker. Talking about London's oldest football club here.
Dempsey. Yeah. It was the anniversary of the Juventus game this week, wasn't it?
Oh, it was indeed, everybody.
Yeah. Fulham wouldn't be a thing without Americans.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, absolutely true. What a way to finish, everybody. Thank you, America. God bless you, Big Sam. Or Uncle Sam, not Big Sam. Be clear about that. Freudian slip.
Always in England. Always in England.
Big Sam's probably someone's uncle.
Hey, Uncle Big Sam has only managed one more game for England than Uncle Sam. And that's a fact, everybody. That's a fact. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag, part of the Acast Creator Network. We're back on Monday, of course, with a brand new ramble. In the meantime, follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify too. Thank you, Andy.
Grazie mille.
Thank you, Vichy.
Thank you.
Mille, another man who has a chainsaw, Javier, Argentina president. And thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You
you've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.